Now, even before the pandemic, loneliness was becoming the defining feature of our era. That's according to the economist Norina Hertz. Her new book, The Lonely Century, is out now. So how can we pull together when we're living in a world compelling us more and more, at least at the moment, to keep apart? Well, Norina joins me. Welcome to the programme, Norina Hertz.
Thank you, Julian.
In this context, how do you define loneliness?
Well, loneliness is not just about craving company, intimacy, friendship, although of course it is that. The way I define loneliness is also feeling unsupported and uncared for by friends and family, for sure, but also by your government, by politicians, by your employer. It's about feeling disconnected, not only from those we're meant to be closest to, but also from our fellow citizens, from the state. Loneliness, as I define it, is political as well as personal, economic as well as driven by the way we relate to each other, and often these are intertwined.
And even before coronavirus, you would argue that this was on the rise.
Absolutely. The scale of the global loneliness crisis cannot be overstated. In the United Kingdom, one in five adults before the coronavirus struck said that they were lonely most or all of the time. One in eight Brits said that they didn't have a single friend that they could rely upon. In the United States, people are so lonely, they're paying to rent a friend or pay to be cuddled. It's a crisis that's taking a huge toll on our physical health as well as our mental health. Loneliness is as bad for us as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's costing our economies billions of pounds a year. And it's also posing a significant threat to democracy, I argue, in the lonely century, with a clear link between the rise in loneliness and the rise in populism in recent years.
There are a lot of big claims in there. How do you scrape the surface of those and put forward hard facts and evidence that would back that up?
Well, my book has 300 pages of footnotes in it, so I probably can't go into all of that.
No, I'd be grateful if you didn't, but I get a sense that you've done, you know, I'm not suggesting you haven't done any research, don't get me wrong, but you know where I'm going with that kind of question.
Absolutely. These are big claims, but everything is very, very verified and rigorously researched. But if you think about it, the drivers that have got us here, smartphones, perma-connected yet perma-distracted, we're together and yet we're alone. Mass migration to cities, leaving urbanites lonely because they're in new environments where they don't know people, and people left behind in rural communities lonely because they've lost their networks. We do less with people, together with other people, than we did in the past. People go to church less, they go to synagogue less, they belong less to trade unions, we eat together less, we live together less than even a decade ago. And also, over the past few decades, what we've seen is the rise of what I think of as the neoliberal mindset. We've become more selfish as a society. You even see this in pop song lyrics, which have migrated from the 1980s onwards from using words like me, my, and we, our, and us, to words like me, my, and I.
Let me bring my guests in, who will no doubt have some thoughts on this. Kehinde Andrews, have a first go at Norina.
Yeah, it sounds like a really interesting book, and one of the sociology of the city. Some of the earliest from Durkheim in early 20th century talked about the, you know, one of the factors when you have urbanization and people, lots of people moving into the cities, the irony that there's more people in the space and you live closer together, but actually you don't talk to anybody because of the way that work works, etc. And so the idea suicide rates are higher in the city historically because of these things. So I guess when you actually look at what that change in urban life, isn't it kind of inevitable that it's going to be loneliness, given the way that we work and the way that everything, that the way that the networks decline, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I draw on Durkheim in my book, actually. And you're right, we've known that cities are lonely for quite a while. But what's fascinating, I found out that, for example, the richer a city, the faster people walk in it. Walking speeds have been increasing in cities. Of course, the faster you walk, the less likely you are to pause, chat to somebody on the street. But also, the denser a city, the less civil a city is.
That's interesting. Actually, Kahinda, your remark a moment ago, I mean, you must see students who are struggling with this a lot.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it is. I mean, and that, I'm not surprised that the more people in the city, the denser it is, because that kind of compounds that irony. There's more people in the space, but you actually don't talk to, you just don't talk to each other as much. And it compounds loneliness.
Stephanie, come in.
Yes, well, and Narina, you've got impeccable timing to come out with a book on loneliness as we all become lonely, alienated remote workers. So, you know, what I found fascinating looking at this is, you know, how you delved into the whole issue of how loneliness is a driver behind the rise of right-wing populist movements, and, you know, how that their support is being driven by this yearning for community, partly because of the declines of old forms of community like trade unions and the like. And how do we deal with that? And in particular, you know, what's the role of, say, robots in countering this?
Yeah. My book's got lots and lots of solutions. I think, you know, with regards to the rise of right-wing populism, part of the loneliness is literally people who don't have close friends, who are lacking company, finding community in right-wing populist movements, who are brilliant at kind of creating a theatre of community. But also it is a sense of loneliness, marginalisation, feeling abandoned, forgotten, left behind, which again right-wing populists have proven to be so effective at dealing with. So there is clearly an economic component to loneliness, not that everyone can't be lonely, rich or poor, you can. But loneliness is exacerbated if you have little money.
Narina, the role of social media you mentioned a moment ago, how big a role is that in this, do you think?
I began my research very neutral on the role of social media, but I ended my research feeling very strongly that in many ways, social media companies are the tobacco industry of the 21st century, really causing very responsible for a rise in loneliness and also anxiety and depression, especially amongst the young who are living their lives very much online.
But they do good too, don't they? And that's where the problem lies, because clearly some people get enormous and perfectly healthy benefits from social media. So how do you strike the balance, do you think?
Of course. And, you know, if you're the LGBTQ kid in a remote town who hasn't ever met someone physically like them, you can find real solace through social media. And I, of course, acknowledge this. But the research, I think, is pretty compelling that on balance, it's a net negative. And it's hard for us as individuals to stop our own addiction. You know, I do suggest just move your phone physically away, but governments really have a role to play here too, better regulating these companies.
Narina, the music indicates the news is imminent. Thank you so much for coming on, Narina Hertz. Her new book is The Lonely Century. You're listening to Weekend from the BBC World Service.